This is Oxide, a show about recombining the elements of our economy to find better ways to care for ourselves and our planet. I'm Paige Ruane. Today's show is about work, time, and money. Three words preached as an ironclad formula that dictate our lives. But our guests today say we've got it all wrong. What's missing is us. That time spent sharing our talents and joys with our communities should be part of our economic formula because it more likely brings about a commonwealth of equality, prosperity, and happiness. Join us next on Oxide. You're listening to Radio Woodstock 100.1. Cornelia Wathen started a free healthcare center that addresses the root causes of health problems as opposed to just symptoms. Cornelia saw money as the only obstacle between problems and solutions, a reality she grew impatient with accepting. Through ingenuity, she found a way to surmount the obstacle, surprising not only her community, but also herself. Hi, Cornelia. Welcome to Oxide, and thank you for being with us.
Hi, Paige. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Please tell me about the organization you're involved with here in Stone Ridge.
Yes. The organization is called the Rondout Valley Holistic Health Community. We opened our doors in 2012, and our intentions in starting this not-for-profit corporation was to provide healthcare that was holistic and financially accessible to everybody. Another intention was to educate our local community about what is holistic healthcare.
For listeners who may not know, can you give a brief explanation of the difference between conventional medicine and holistic care?
Well, conventional medicine is a more mechanistic paradigm. It's based on treating symptoms with drugs and surgery mainly. And the holistic paradigm considers the whole person. So it's focusing on not just the body, but also the mind, the emotions, and spiritual aspects. On a deeper level, holistic medicine is based on the belief that unconditional love and support is the most powerful healer.
Cornelia did not start out in holistic medicine. In fact, it was the farthest thing from her mind. She was a school teacher of young children in Westchester, New York. She kept it close to home by teaching at her own childhood school. Her life began with all things familiar. What sort of schools did you go to?
The school I was in was a progressive school. No homework. Really, children were allowed to follow their dreams, their passions, to a large extent, in addition to the more formal learning. I loved school. I liked organizing things and making things happen and being creative.
How long did you teach children?
Oh, I taught 25 years. So in the 80s and early 90s.
Cornelia started teaching at Bronxville Elementary School in 1980 after studying at Wellesley and getting a master's at the Teachers College at Columbia University. Teaching was a delight for her, but Cornelia became disheartened as school priorities changed. What was the experience of teaching like for you?
I had a lot of freedom, and then it began to disappear. Well, I went back to the school that I had grown up in for a job, and that's a very progressive school where children were encouraged to learn through their own projects. There was a lot of freedom, a lot of creativity, and I loved teaching in those circumstances. One of my favorite memories is doing a show with my class based on a Japanese story. The children rewrote the story, and the music teacher helped them write songs to make it a musical. The art teacher helped them make costumes. There was writing, there was math, there was artwork and creating our sets. It was just an absolutely joyful experience. The children were totally involved in it, learned so much from it. That's the way I learned as a child. And it was a great sadness to me to watch that school where I worked become more and more ordinary with time as the Board of Education wanted more and more conventional ways of teaching where kids sat in a row and were told what to think. So by the time I retired, I was happy to leave.
So how did you see this change in the school affecting the children?
So I saw them lose interest in learning. I saw their behavior becoming more difficult. They're having more trouble paying attention. The excitement wasn't there. Yeah. And that's the way I feel about the educational system currently. I hope this pendulum will swing back to more creative freedom for children. The progressive education model I'm describing honors every aspect of the child, not just their mind. It's taking into account their emotions, their spirit. It's addressing the whole child. And so it is a holistic education.
This contrast would have a profound effect on Cornelia. Day in and day out, as the school changed, a growing disconnect between students and teachers widened. She watched a light go out and felt powerless in the face of bureaucracy. As that world grew smaller, beyond the school walls, she sought expansion. Her neighbor gave her a book on Edgar Cayce, a renowned Christian mystic of the late 19th and early 20th century. He would advise clients on health matters while in a trance, from which it is reported he would remember nothing. His clients included Woodrow Wilson, Thomas Edison, Irving Berlin, and George Gershwin. He never charged money for his sessions.
Reading about it opened up my mind to reincarnation, past lives, and to different forms of healing. So he was my introduction to holistic health care and psychics. It changed my life in many ways.
She started attending workshops on these mysterious new subjects as an antidote to the deadening atmosphere at work. During one, a psychic was mentioned. Cornelia felt inexplicably called to have a reading.
So I had this session, and she told me that I was a healer, and that I was within the next 6 months, I was going to meet my healing teacher, and that I would go back to school and study energy healing. And I thought to myself, I don't think this psychic is so hot, because that's not possible. I didn't think of myself as a healer, and I had no money, two young children, couldn't possibly go back to school at that point. My husband had passed away, and times were difficult. I had two young children and not a lot of money.
How old were you when you lost your husband?
I was in my early 40s.
It was a sudden loss?
Pretty sudden, yeah. He had a cancer that, well, we were only aware of it for a few months before he died, yeah.
How old were your children?
They were 10 and 12. So I basically heard that, discounted it, and forgot about it. And then truly within 6 months, I found myself at this workshop where Barbara Brennan was teaching. I'd never heard of her. Barbara Brennan is one of the most extraordinary healers of the 20th century, certainly. She looks at a person and can see inside the body on the physical and the cellular and I believe the atomic level and see what's going on. When she spoke for that one day at the workshop, it opened up new universes for me of things I'd never heard of, didn't know existed. And I felt I had to study with her. I had to go to her school. And as it turned out, when I shared my excitement with my mom, she said she'd be willing to babysit for me during the weekends of the school training and help me financially. So I did go to her school, and it changed my life.
This was all new to Cornelia. Growing up, she and her family completely accepted conventional medicine as the only way to treat medical problems. She grew up in a middle-class household. Her father was a businessman who exported toys, and her mother was a homemaker. What sorts of attitudes did your parents have about health and healthcare?
They didn't know anything other than conventional health care. They put our family doctors on pedestals always. My father had a series of heart attacks, which eventually he died from, and his care was entirely conventional. Yeah.
Her father's experience left Cornelia deeply apprehensive when she started to have heart problems.
So for, I'd say around 10 years, I'd been having episodes of atrial fibrillation, which is an intensely irregular heartbeat that would last sometimes for 24 hours or longer. And during those episodes, I really couldn't do anything except lie down. And they were very uncomfortable and frightening. These episodes became more intense and more frequent and were interfering with my life. So I made a decision to have an operation, which has been successful for many people with that condition. It's purely Western medicine. It's surgery, pretty invasive therapy. So I went through that procedure. And to make a long story short, I became much worse after the operation. And for 2 months, I couldn't do anything, really. A friend called, whom I hadn't spoken to in a couple of years, who listened to my plight and said, "Oh, well, you ought to call this person I've been working with who helped me a great deal. He does something called the emotion code and the body code." So I started working with this person, Don, and using that modality, he was able to tell me one of the underlying causes, which he said was mercury poisoning, which I have now dealt with. And he also worked with trapped emotions that were associated with this condition in me. On one day, I had a long session where I released the most painful emotions that I've ever experienced in my life. And from that day forward, I had no more atrial fibrillation. Boom, it was ended. And it hadn't gotten better up until that point. And I was astonished by that and started studying the emotion code and eventually became certified in it and started practicing it myself.
You've mentioned how, though grounded in science, some of these healing modalities may never be proved, or maybe not for a long time in terms of empirical science. What is it like when you're met with cynicism about these modalities?
The only way to break through that is experientially. The healthcare days, I remember some people who were dragged there by a spouse who were totally skeptical, but went to a practitioner and had an extraordinary experience. And that opened their willingness to consider other possibilities.
Tell me how you met the co-founders of the health community.
Well, I had recently moved to this area, the Hudson Valley, the Rondout Valley, and I became interested in sustainable economy, sustainable living, and took a training offered by the transition movement. And was involved for a year or so with the local transition movement to try to develop sustainability here.
For listeners who don't know, what is the transition movement?
The transition movement began in England with a town who decided they wanted to be completely self-sustainable, to grow their own food, to generate their own power, to have their own businesses, not to be reliant on large corporations, so that everything they needed was within their own town. And they succeeded with that to a large extent. Their story became well known, and other towns started copying what they were doing, and eventually it became an international movement. And through that work, I met the other two founders of the holistic health community. The three of us realized that we had a common dream that had to do with holistic health care. And so we began working together to brainstorm what we could develop. One was Faye Loomis, and Faye was the widow of Eckhart Loomis, who is considered by many people to be the father of holistic medicine in this country. He He was one of the people who helped to start the American Holistic Medical Association. And the other person was Nancy Eos, who's a holistic medical doctor. She has studied conventional medicine, but she's also studied a number of other modalities.
Faye had collaborated with her husband. When he died, she wanted to continue his work in some way. She would recall, as a young surgeon, Everts worked at a remote medical mission in Newfoundland, traveling by dog sled to treat families of fishermen. While there in the 1930s, he reported that a distinct thought flashed through his mind: treat the whole man. He would spend the next 18 years contemplating ways to incorporate mental, physical, and spiritual elements into the treatment of illness. After serving in World War II as a medic, he established a treatment center in California, which laid the foundation for the professional acceptance of holistic healthcare in the United States. Nancy Eos, Cornelia's other co-founder, is a medical doctor and homeopath with experience in emergency medicine, including helicopter rescue. She directs emergency medical training at SUNY in Sullivan County, worked as a volunteer physician in rural India, and led the practice of holistic medicine on Native American reservations in Arizona. What inspired you to make this effort together?
The excitement that we shared a dream and that we could help each other, that none of us perhaps felt that we could do it alone, so we tried. We organized some local meetings, inviting the public to come, listen to us and to what we were proposing to do.
What was the idea of what you were proposing?
Well, the initial idea was to have these monthly holistic healthcare days where volunteer practitioners would make available their modality for no charge to the public. We didn't know how much of an interest there would be. And when we held these meetings, we were surprised, delighted by the number of practitioners who showed up and who expressed an interest in participating. So it was right away clear that we could go ahead with that.
Cornelia and her colleagues would pay close attention to the dynamics of exchange as they designed their center, honoring natural impulses often overlooked in a commercial exchange. Why was there an intention to make it free?
We decided we wanted to have a model where no one had to pay, so anybody could come, even people with no money at all. But we would ask people to pay by a donation, and if that was not possible for them, we asked them instead to pay it forward, meaning to give some kind of loving care to someone else. If you receive something and don't have to pay anything for it, you don't value it as highly as if you have to pay for it. And it's in valuing it and putting that value there that it becomes more powerful and meaningful and successful. You receive more when there's an exchange, when you're not just getting something for free.
How do you receive more when you are giving?
I guess one could talk for days about that. For example, the people who come to offer their services at the healthcare day feel they receive tremendously from what they do. They love coming. There's been a lot of research done recently that people who give volunteer work actually are healthier. They go to doctors less, they live longer, and so on. There are people who come to the healthcare days who haven't had healthcare in years because they have no insurance and they have no money. So this makes it possible for them to come and to feel good about it, not to feel as if people feel embarrassed to receive things for free sometimes. But this gives them a way of paying.
What are their responses to there being this different kind of exchange that doesn't involve money?
They are grateful for it in many cases. Some of them don't make use of it. Some of them will give a healthy donation. But those who do need it are really grateful for it, and they tell us what they plan to do in terms of paying it forward. They take that very seriously. They talk about how they are helping a neighbor who's in distress by cooking food for them or taking care of their child. And it's very moving to read.
So tell me more about the need that you saw that you were trying to answer with this center.
Well, I think it's a national need. As we see in the news all the time, all of the controversy about health care, some politicians wanting free health care for all and others not. We have a system where so many people either have no insurance or they have only catastrophic insurance, so they can't afford the health care that they really need. Even those who do have insurance, the insurance does not pay for holistic health care.
What kinds of problems do people come in to the center with?
Everything you can imagine. A lot of people come with pain of one sort or another. People come with psychological issues. People come with diseases like cancer, Lyme disease, all kinds of things. You name it.
Do people often use the holistic care in conjunction with conventional care?
We hope so. We encourage them to do that. We're not offering primary care to everyone. We're offering just something to complement whatever they're doing on their own.
Are there any requirements you have to meet as a facility that administers care?
We are not a clinic. If we were a clinic, there would be many requirements, such as having a flu shot every year for everyone involved. So what we are doing as an organization is making available the space for free to the practitioners, and they come with the understanding that their work there is an extension of their private practice.
So how does it work, your health center? How do you make it work with just the volunteers and without an exchange of money?
Well, you often hear that when something is a volunteer organization, you can't count on your volunteers because they're not employees. But what we have found is that our practitioners love to come. We have a group of around 50 practitioners, and each month about 18 to 20 come. What makes it work is the experience being so positive that people want to come back. Before the healthcare day begins, a couple of us work to energetically clear the space of any negative energy. And then when the practitioners arrive, we have an opening circle in which we stand together and meditate and allow the unconditional love of our hearts to fill the space. And people, not knowing that we've done this, tell us over and over again that they walk in the door and they feel better the moment they walk in. And it's something that we as practitioners feel as well.
What does the work at the center mean to you personally?
Well, in my lifetime, I've been part of a number of different spiritual paths. At the moment, I'm not part of a specific path with a name to it because I made a conscious decision to allow service to be my spiritual path. So for me, it's my way of practicing the highest level of myself. And it's a way of experiencing love. So it's been a very rich experience for me.
You do fine with your private practice, and then the energy that you put into this, you're able to sustain yourself.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I'm in many ways sustained by it because of the community that we've created. We support each other.
Can you tell me a story of someone that the center has helped that has particularly touched you?
We get feedback from people. We are always touched by what people say. One person said that their body was constantly in pain, and this was the first time they'd had relief pain in a long time. and they couldn't afford a massage. Otherwise, they expressed their deep gratitude, how people feel listened to and hadn't been touched or listened to in years, and feel loved by the people who do the therapy in the center. We get comments like that all the time, and we love sharing them with the practitioners.
Cornelia, what are your hopes for your work?
Well, we dream of raising big money at some point and having our own facility, our own land. And if that were to become possible, we could expand our services greatly. We've been talking a little bit about possibly making a film about what we're doing so that we can have a bigger audience or more people understanding what we're doing so that we can inspire other communities to do the same thing, also to have people know what we're doing and support us.
When does the health center take place?
It's the third Tuesday of every month for our healthcare day and the first Thursday of every month for our self-care classes.
Where does it take place?
At the Marbletown Community Center, right on Route 209. It's in Stone Ridge across from the Key Bank.
Great. Well, Cornelia, I really thank you for your time and for sharing your story and all of this information about what you've created.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to speak about it.
To find out more about Rondout Valley Holistic Health Community, visit rvhhc.org. Oxide is written and produced by Paige Ruane. Tim McLaughlin is our digital editor. Digital editing assistance by Justin Foy. Kira Henderson is our researcher. Jack McDonald is our editorial advisor. Special thanks to Lynn Melcher and Jimmy Buff. Music in this episode by Glenn Porter, Gorkin Hahn Jr., Red Lounge Orchestra, Marconi Union, Ben Lucas Boyson, Clap Your Hands, Lo S, Brian Reitzel, Todd Reynolds, The Boxer Rebellion, Tycho, Cass, Library Tapes, Chihei Hadakayama, Brian McBride, Aaron Krauss, Lowercase Noises, Jim Guthrie, and Public Enemy. You're listening to Radio Woodstock 100.1. Kick the bass for them brothers and let them know what goes on. Rolling Stones is a rap game, not bragging. Look bigger than Jagger, not sagging. His brother backwards, I'ma leave it at that. Daddy got nothing to do with rap. Check the facts, expose those cats. Who pose as heroes, take advantage of blacks. Your government's gangsters, so cut the crap. A war going on, so where y'all at? Fight for power, cause great responsibility. F the police, but who's stopping you from killing me? Disaster fiascos are looped by P.E. If it's I instead of we believe in TV. Spreading rich adventures, this new thing about snitches. Watch the masses move as the masses switches. System distant, but barely missed her. My soul intentions to save my brothers and sisters.